Ooh, you want to play psycho killer? Can I be the helpless victim?
Cross your eyes and scream, man. Scream for your life.
Welcome. I'm your scream queen, Jenica Olin. This is my 21st episode. We are now in April, and this episode will come out April 3rd. My theme for this month is April Fuels Fury, with some gotcha moments where the punchline is your death. Oh, I asked you to dance? Actually, on second thought, I really just wanted to humiliate you in front of the whole school for being atypical compared to your peers. Of course, I'm talking about our prom queen soaked in pig's blood, Carrie. This whole month will be about women expecting one thing, and then men getting something completely different than what they thought they were in for. There's nothing better than a woman's revenge. If you're new here, each episode will have an intro, brief synopsis of the movie, an analysis of the film, and then I will get into the true crime of it all. I'm a huge true crime fan, and I like to make connections between the true horrors that inspire our darkest imaginations. The truth is, the stuff on screen is way tamer than the true horrors that take place every day. Spoiler alert, I've made it my job to spoil the shit out of this movie. Today, I will be covering the iconic 1976 Carrie, directed by Brian De Palma and written by Stephen King and Lawrence Cohen, starring Sissy Spacek, Piper Laurie, and Amy Irving. The estimated budget was about $2 million. And then the estimated gross was about $34 million. They made a lot of money back. The tagline for this film is, "You were warned never to push Carrie to the limits. Now you must face the evil consequences." Some quick trivia about this film. The name of the high school is Bates High School, a reference to Norman Bates from Psycho 1960. In addition, the four-note violin theme from Psycho is used over and over in this film. While speaking at a book event in Fort Myers, Florida in 2010, Stephen King recalled that he was paid just $2,500 for the movie rights to Carrie, which may seem like a pittance, but he has no regrets. "I was fortunate to have that happen to my first book," King said. The prom scene took over 2 weeks to shoot and required a total of 35 takes. Brian De Palma had to dump several scenes from the novel due to budget limitation, one of which is where Carrie blows up petrol stations with her mind as part of the town destruction. The effects work would have been too expensive at the time. Similar scenes did end up in the remake Carrie of 2013. This was John Travolta's first major film role. In real life, Sissy Spacek attended Quitman High School, and she was homecoming queen. In 2022, this film was selected for preservation in the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress, deeming it culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. The film received 2 nominations at the 49th Academy Awards for Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress. Let's set the scene with a synopsis of the movie.
"Tonight, no one will laugh at Carrie.
If you don't have a date to the prom next Friday, would you like to go with me?
She's with the best-looking boy in the senior class.
He's trying to trick me again.
She'll be voted queen of the prom.
You know, I can make sure that you don't hurt Carrie White anymore.
For Carrie, it will be a dream come true. For everyone else, it will be a nightmare."
The film begins in the locker room, full of teenage girls, including Carrie White. Carrie gets her first period, and after being in distress, cries out for help. Instead of helping, the other girls ridicule and harass her, throwing tampons, sanitary towels, and toilet paper at her. Teacher Miss Collins rushes in to stop the commotion. White, who appears to be bottling extreme rage, snaps a light bulb. After questioning Carrie, Miss Collins realizes that Carrie is unaware of the concept of menstruation. Because of this, Miss Collins asked the school principal to excuse Carrie from gym class for a week because of the trauma. On her way home, Carrie uses her recently discovered telekinesis to stop a boy from teasing her. While at home, Carrie is tormented by her delusional mother, who locks Carrie in a closet and forces her to pray. She believes that Carrie received her period due to sinning. Miss Collins, still livid about the incident, berates the other girls and forces them through a detention, deliberately physically exhausting them. The leader of the clique, Chris Hargensen, refuses to participate and, as punishment, is banned from the upcoming prom.
Well, there are 10 minutes left. Stick them up your... down, do you understand me?
She can't get away with this if we all stick together, Norma! Helen! Sue!
Shut up, Chris. Just shut up.
Furious, she blames Carrie for her misfortune. Meanwhile, another one of the girls, Sue Snow, feels guilty about her part in teasing Carrie, so she asks her boyfriend, Tommy Ross, to take Carrie to prom. Tommy begrudgingly agrees. When he asks Carrie, she refuses, thinking that yet another trick is being played on her. After a comforting pep talk with Miss Collins, and after Tommy further insists, Carrie finally agrees to go to the prom with Tommy.
Prom?
Yeah, the senior prom. You know, everybody's going.
It's that teacher that called, wasn't it?
Please see that I'm not like you, Mom. I'm funny. I mean, all the kids think I'm funny. I don't want to be. I want to be normal. I want to start to try and be a whole person before it's too late for me to...
While everyone else is getting ready for the prom, Chris schemes with her boyfriend, Billy Nolan, and best friend, Nora, to get revenge on Carrie. They go to a farm and slaughter some pigs, drain their blood into a bucket, and place the bucket on one of the rafters in the school gym. Carrie asks her mother permission to go to the prom. Her mother becomes unhinged at the suggestion, commenting that Tommy is only after her for sex, and that this will lead her down a road of perpetual sin. This leads to a violent argument between Carrie and her mother, who uses her telekinesis to slam windows and doors in her home. After another fight between Carrie and her mother the night of the prom, Carrie uses her powers to push her mother onto the bed and tells her that she must stop worrying. Carrie and Tommy arrive at the prom, and Carrie begins to feel accepted by Tommy's peers. Miss Collins relates to Carrie the story of her own prom, telling her she should cherish the memory forever. Carrie and Tommy dance together. Tommy has since fallen for Carrie and kisses her. As per Chris instructs, Norma and some of Billy's friends fix the ballots so that Carrie and Tommy are elected prom king and queen. They make their way to the stage, and Carrie finally feels what it's like to be accepted. Meanwhile, Sue sneaks into the prom and sees Chris and Billy under the stage. She realizes their plan. Chris is going to yank a cord and dump the pig's blood all over Carrie, as she's declared prom queen. Sue rushes toward the stage frantically, but is intercepted by Miss Collins, who thinks that Sue is out to make trouble for Carrie after seeing that Carrie and Tommy are together. Miss Collins throws her out of the gym, thinking that she was to spoil Carrie's moment. At that exact moment, Chris yanks the cord, drenching Carrie in pig's blood.
No! Oh.
The students gasp and look on in horror. Tommy is furious, but the bucket falls and knocks him unconscious. Carrie snaps and imagines that all the students and faculty are actually laughing at her, which her mother had warned her would happen. Carrie uses her telekinesis to destroy the gym and kill her peers and teachers, including Miss Collins. As Carrie walks home, a fire truck is seen passing her. Chris and Billy attempt to run Carrie over with Billy's car. Carrie uses her telekinesis to flip the car, and it explodes. When Carrie returns home, she draws a bath. After she cleaned herself, her mother appears and tells her about the night Carrie was conceived. Convinced that her daughter is an evil witch, she takes out a knife and stabs Carrie in the back. Carrie falls down the stairs and stumbles. When her mother corners her in the kitchen, Carrie uses her power to crucify her mother with kitchen knives and tools. After the death, Carrie becomes wrought with guilt and uses the lit candles to set her house ablaze. The home eventually collapses and Carrie dies amongst the debris. Sometime later, Sue, having survived the prom night catastrophe, is suffering from depression over the death of her peers. She experiences a night in which she visits the location of Carrie's house. As she reaches down to put flowers on the burnt lot, Carrie's blood-stained hand reaches up from the rubble and grabs her. Sue then wakes up screaming in the arms of her mother. So today my guest is Lou Pimble. He is my tattoo artist and friend.
Yep, that's me.
Is there anything, like, where can people find you? What kind of art do you do? All that kind of stuff.
Well, I've been tattooing for almost 24 years. I also ran a apparel company. You can find my stuff on Instagram. It would be my tattoo page is Lou Pimble, and this other page is Skeleton Goods. Yeah, so you can find my information on Instagram, at Lou Pimble on Instagram for my tattoo page, and at Skeleton Goods for my apparel and homeware stuff.
Awesome. Yes, you should definitely check him out. He's an amazing artist. He's done, like, my entire right arm, basically. Still working on that. And done some covered some of my shitty tattoos from my younger days.
Yep, that's right.
So I'm very grateful for your ability to cover that horrible shit up.
Well, I mean, you always come up with cool ideas, so it's always a pleasure to work with you on these projects.
Oh, well, thank you. You always seem to, like, match my vision, so that's good.
Well, I think we're on the same page most of the time. We got kind of similar interests and style alike, so yeah, it's pretty easy.
So today we're talking about Carrie, the 1976 film classic, and there is a lot to unpack in this movie when it comes to poor Carrie and her being bullied and the consequences of bullying. I guess we'll just kind of jump into the themes. Starting out in the movie, the opening sequence is Carrie in the shower.
Yep.
And she is getting her period for the first time.
Yep.
At, like, 17 years old.
Yes.
and she thinks she's dying. She's got period blood on her hands, and she's touching people.
Yep. Oh, that's the worst thing for me, was her running around touching everybody. I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah, I think that they were really mean to her.
Yeah.
But also, don't fucking touch me with your period blood.
Yeah, I think that would kind of make me a bit angry, too. I think the phrase they were saying was, plug it up, I think.
Yeah.
That's what they kept chanting.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, it's kind of understandable.
Yeah, I mean, someone should have had enough empathy to explain to her, hey, you're on your period. They end up realizing that she's on her period, and they're like, Carrie has her first period. And they're like, plug it up.
Yeah.
Yelling, throwing tampons, or not tampons, but pads at
her. Yeah, yeah, from the dispenser, yeah.
Yeah. What I really like about that scene is there's a lot of nudity, but it's not sexualized.
Yeah, it's very subtle. Just girls just having fun in the changing rooms, very lighthearted.
Yeah. It's just like, it's almost like being at a nudist colony.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the human body.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing weird about it. Yeah. I think Americans are really weird about nudity, where maybe, I know other cultures aren't as weird about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, coming from England, that's kind of how it is over there a little bit. But yeah, I feel like it was just the cool girls that were more happy with their body and just kind of being a bit more happy, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Carrie's obviously a little bit more like wrapping herself up and ashamed of her nudity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why she went in the shower at the end. She was like the last one in the shower.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But that whole scene is so iconic and you really feel for her. And then we've got the coach who comes out and she stops the girls and she starts berating them for everything they're doing. And she's definitely, in my eyes, like a hero in this film.
Oh, she's awesome.
Yeah, I love her.
Yeah, she's very heartwarming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She really tries to teach the other girls to have empathy for Carrie. And, you know, she gives them consequences for their actions. Mm-hmm. But then the girls end up being more resentful to Carrie because you never want to blame yourself. It's always someone else. That's the problem.
Yeah.
So they target her because of that, which is totally fucked up.
And she slaps him.
The teacher
slaps her out on the field, doesn't she? I'm like, wow, that wouldn't fly nowadays.
No, it
but
wouldn't.
It should.
Yeah. I mean, I was wholeheartedly approving of that scene.
Yeah. Agreed.
I was like, yep, slap that bitch.
Yeah.
When it comes to the bullying and everything, so we get a glimpse at it in the locker room, but really that's just the beginning. Like, they get so much worse to Carrie. When it comes to like the manipulation of someone who's vulnerable in a school, like the girls try to get their boyfriends to ask her to the prom.
Yeah.
And that whole thing is so skeezy and sad because I love how Carrie, when she's originally asked, like, she's not that naive. Like, she realizes, why would you ask me?
Yeah.
Like, why would you do this? Mm-hmm. And she doesn't initially, like, I don't know how many times he asks her to the prom, but it's more than twice.
It's a couple of times, yeah. But I think there was before that, she says that she likes the poem in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like, I forget what his name is, the handsome curly haired guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like he was like, oh, it kind of, she showed up on his radar then almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought that was kind of an interesting element.
Yeah. Oh, another thing about Carrie too, she is emphasized as this kind of like ugly, mousy character, but she's actually really beautiful.
Oh, I had such a crush on her when I first saw this movie.
She's so beautiful.
And even now, as like an older woman, I still think she's very attractive.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, she's, but they kind of gave her that with the hair down in front of her eyes, and she's kind of does that like, almost that like librarian thing where she suddenly polishes up and becomes beautiful at the prom.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, she's definitely got it going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, she, her dress too. I mean, we'll get to it, but her, I loved her prom dress. And she's not wearing a bra.
No.
I'm surprised her mom didn't say anything to her about wearing a bra.
Well, she did, I think. She said something about nipples or something.
She does, but she's not like, hey, I don't, she shames her for wearing a dress at all.
I think she's like, mom, they're just breasts or something. She says something like that when she's getting ready to go out and her mom's trying to stop her from going out.
Yeah.
I think she's, if I recall correctly, I can't remember now.
She does say that. Yeah. She does say that. But I just feel like the mom does not emphasize the right things.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, I mean, the mom, that's the least of the worries of the mom. She's off a rocker.
She's just, like, she's definitely naive. She's sheltered. Like, even the teacher's talking to the principal about the whole incident. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, you know, you've seen her mother. You know who her mother is. Like, of course she's going to not understand these things. Because he's like, how does a girl, like, this age not understand what your period is?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, she has a religious zealot mother that shames her for everything she does that's, you know, human.
But I think the principal, he really didn't care anyway because he kept getting her name wrong.
Yeah, he did. Like,
he just didn't give a shit about her anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
And he was like, he was more on the bully side. Like, he thought that the consequence of not being able to go to prom was too harsh.
Yeah.
So he made the coach give a different alternative. But if they didn't do the alternative, then they would not get to go to prom.
Yeah.
So let's get into the mom a little bit. That's kind of, I think, where this leads us. I think the first scene that freaked me out with the mom was when she throws her in that little prayer room locks her in.
Yeah.
That's so traumatizing.
That hit hard, I feel like, yeah. And there's actually, I made a note on this one because it was so weird, but there's a crucifix on the wall, and it's the most creepiest crucifix I've ever seen. Like, Jesus has his eyes painted in, like, real beady, and it just kind of does, like, a zoom in on that. Like, Jesus is watching her in this room.
Yeah.
I don't know, it just gave me the chills.
It is really creepy. Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's this brass figure, and then for some reason they painted eyes on it. Yeah. Like, why the fuck would you do that?
Scares the hell out of me. And it's those eyes that follow you around the room. You know, it's terrifying.
Yeah. But, you know, she's told she has to go down there and she has to pray for her sins because she gets her period. That's right. Am I remembering?
Yeah, no, it is. So yeah,
it's because she gets her period that she throws her in there. And so it's just like this.
How's that sin?
So that kind of gets into, and as a girl growing up, like, religion is very hard on the female, you know, embodiment of anything.
I can see that.
You know, Eve ate the apple. So, you know, we are the origin of sin. Mm-hmm. We're the one who caused it. Mm-hmm. We must be punished. How dare us,
Even going back to, like, Mary being pregnant with Jesus, there was never like a woman had sex for this to happen. It was like this immaculate conception. So they're even just like being like, no, sex didn't even happen. It just magically appeared.
Yeah.
So it's just religion or Christianity in general, I feel like, very avoidant to that situation.
Yeah, very much like women have to be pure. And also, we have to be punished because we are not pure and we're the reason why the world isn't pure.
Yeah, you ate the apple, yeah.
Yeah. Like, the mom, she's very delusional, even in her religious, like, zealot character. There is a passage in the Bible where it's generally interpreted differently than the way she interprets it. Like, she's even more extreme than your average person.
Yeah.
So she quotes Genesis chapter 3 to say that sexuality is evil. And the chapter is the story of Adam and Eve eating the forbidden fruit. Mm-hmm. While some Bible scholars draw parallels to this in sexuality, it's and like the whole like becoming aware and ashamed of your nakedness, it's not generally accepted as the interpretation.
Yeah. I remember reading that. It was like the incorrect verse or something. I can't remember exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like whatever is the most extreme version of interpretation you can have.
Yeah.
That's the version that that mom's going
with. That's the way she went. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was like she went to knock on someone's door, wasn't it? Like a neighbor's door to spread the good word. Mm-hmm. And the woman's at the door has been like, Jesus Christ, I've got to let this woman in.
Yeah.
And she's just, it was just the whole atmosphere was just super awkward. And even this nice, kind lady from next door was like, this bitch is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely shows through.
Yeah. A lot of people, especially the adults, they feel for Carrie. Mm-hmm. They realize like this girl is going through psychological abuse. Mm-hmm. And this mom is basically handicapping her daughter. Telling her anything she does, anything that's worldly, is sinful. Mm-hmm. And just being in her own skin, having breasts, having a period, having a uterus, she's automatically sinful and must be punished.
I mean, and this is a time, you know, in the 80s where it's really common for families to go to church every Sunday. You know, so this is like Christianity is pretty popular back then.
Yeah.
But even then, people are still like, wow, this is a step too far.
I remember, so I made a personal connection to this. Like when I was 16, I grew up in the Jehovah's Witness religion.
Okay.
Which is very extreme.
Yeah.
And women did not really have a place in the church. You couldn't be like a preacher. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't called church. It was called Kingdom Hall. But I had to wear a certain length of a skirt and I had to like wear pantyhose. Oh, I fucking hated that shit. but, you know, women were often the scapegoat when it came to situations. And I really started to hate God at this, like, in my coming of age moment.
Yeah.
And I remember telling my mom that I thought God was like a sexist asshole in the car. I was like, hey, mom. Yeah. She was like, okay, I understand. She's not a meek woman, but I don't know why. She didn't. But I think she just chose to ignore me.
Oh.
I think she ignored that.
It's a good way to handle it.
Yeah. Mm. When I started dating Pete, she blamed him for me becoming an atheist. Yeah. And I was like, you don't remember me telling you that I hate God?
Yeah.
That I think he's a sexist asshole. And if he was real, I want nothing to do with him. Even if.
If he was real.
Even if he was real, yeah. I would rather be with Satan. Than those fucking assholes up there judging everyone and telling women that we are subservient to men. Fuck you guys.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in a very religious family also. Went to church every Sunday. My dad was crazy born-again Christian. It was definitely rammed down our throats. Like, you have to go to church until you leave home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it Baptist for you?
No, this was in England, so this is like a Protestant. So
okay.
Like a Church of England. But it was very happy, clappy. There was lots of like hands-on healing, people speaking in tongues.
Oh,
so it was a wild experience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm very anti-religion now, but I'm very well-versed in Christianity. I've read the Bible multiple times. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting when I have these conversations with Christian people because I know a lot about it. Also hate it massively.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's why this movie hits home so good for me, because it's kind of, I mean, my dad wasn't as crazy as Carrie's mum, not by any means, but he was very strict. So, you know, sex and all that kind of stuff and dating girls was a big no-no. It was all kind of done underneath the table, kind of hush-hush.
Yeah.
So, yeah, kind of relatable.
Yeah. Oh, you know, that makes me think, like, when it comes to Carrie, too, women, like, just anything that you wear, it was blamed on you. Mm-hmm. If a man had a sinful thought about you, yeah. it was your fault.
Yeah.
Why was I wearing that?
Yeah.
Why was I so pretty?
Yeah.
Why was I so nice? I was leading him on. How dare I be a beautiful young girl that's just vulnerable in the world and, like, fuck all of that shit.
Yeah, that's wild. Wild. Different times, for sure.
Yeah, and that was definitely an emphasis when it came to Jehovah's Witnesses and the way that women were viewed. I was definitely ashamed for just being who I was.
Oh.
And, like, even my stepdad was he was a Baptist,
mm-hmm.
but he would tell me, like, if I had even a little bit of a midriff, I would be told that I look like a slut.
Wow.
I'd be like, yeah, it was fucked up.
Well, I have a sister. She's 2 years younger than me. And it was the same with her. Like, my parents would have her wear a skirt that was, like, midway down her shins.
Uh-huh.
And on the way to school, she had a little mini skirt that she would put on. Mm-hmm. We'd, like, have to walk through the woods on the way to school, and she would go up into the bush, take her skirt off, put a short one on, and off we'd go.
Yeah.
And so at school, she'd be walking around with a skirt up to a, you know, a lot higher, let's say.
Yeah.
And on the way home, she'd have to change back, because perish the thought my dad would see her. That would have just been World War III.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, yeah.
I remember, like, I mean, I've always been very anti-authority, I guess, or... Yeah, I remember, like, growing up and being told that if I wore certain things, I was a slut or I look like a whore mm-hmm. or something like that. And I automatically knew that that was wrong.
Yeah.
And that there was nothing wrong with me, that it was them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember telling my stepdad and my mom, like, why are you looking at me like that? This isn't my problem. You have a problem. Why are you the one that is automatically thinking of me in that way? Mm-hmm. Fuck you.
Yeah.
So I cause problems, you know.
Yeah, I can see that.
I was a problem child. I was a problem child because I stuck up for myself and I was like, you're the problem because you're sexualizing girls, little girls.
I feel like maybe your generation or my generation is kind of like the last people to fight that, because nowadays it seems so much more like people are so much more liberal and, like, you know, more open. So people are just wearing what they want.
Yeah.
But I feel like back in, like, the 80s and 90s, that really wasn't the case.
No.
You really had to kind of dig your heels in if you wanted to voice your opinion.
Yeah.
You know, I always grew up where you were, like, seen but not heard.
Yeah.
That's, like, my father's, like, whole mentality. The kids mm-hmm. just be seen and not heard. But I don't think that really flies nowadays. Kids are just doing whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, I think, you know, the pendulum has kind of swung to the entire opposite direction. And there is some, you know, there is some in between that we could get to.
Yeah, I think there is like a happy medium for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Being anti-religion in my family, you were like seen as being like a Satanist, mm-hmm. like a Satan worshiper.
Yeah.
And Monique, I just want to talk to my sister really quick. Monique, I know that you're listening, and I know that you thought I was a Satan worshiper for a long time. I am not a Satan worshiper, but just the word atheist mm-hmm. to my family automatically meant that I was evil.
Yeah, if you're not with us, you're against us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only one that came out as an atheist to my family. Everyone else was very religious. Stayed with the Jehovah's Witness religion. And I eventually got through to them and they realized, like, oh, she's not sacrificing little children.
Yeah.
She's not drinking the blood of pigs.
Not today.
Like, she didn't just showering in the blood of, like, innocence. Like, I'm not doing any of that. That's right. Not what an atheist is.
No. I feel like for me, I remember hiding, like, Slayer albums from my dad, because there was just, like, you know, South of Heaven and all these kind of crazy, like, pictorials on the album covers. But I feel like because I didn't want to be a Christian, but I was more interested in Slayer albums.
Yeah.
That suddenly they're like, oh, well, you must be a Satanist then because you're listening to this devil music.
Yeah.
But really, it was just the fact that I didn't believe in any of it. It was all bullshit.
Yeah, the whole satanic panic was definitely a big thing in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I was told that I couldn't, anything that had to do with witchcraft, I couldn't have any part of it.
Yeah.
And that almost leads into Carrie and her telekinesis.
Yeah.
Because she had to suppress so much. It comes out in some way, right? Yeah. So in the movie, her supernatural abilities were connected to her trauma. And like, I loved when she used her powers on her mom.
Yes. Freaked her out.
Yes. And it was just like further proof that her mom, for her mom, that she was right. That had a fucking demon child. Yeah.
She was a witch for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wondered with her becoming a woman and starting a period, whether her powers got stronger.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like to the beginning with it was just like, oh, I'll make a light bulb explode or make the door shut. But then at the end, all hell's breaking loose. I wondered if it was, you know, her becoming a woman made it even stronger and more apparent.
Yeah. I think the scene that really I was like, fuck yeah, Carrie, is when her mom, when she's about to go to the dance and her mom is arguing with her and going to try to stop her. And she's like, lay down on the bed. She tells her to lay and she like pushes her telekinetically, pushes her on the bed. And then she tries to get up and she pushes her down again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, Carrie, so fucking good. Take her down.
Yeah, so good.
I wish she would have just kept doing that with her powers.
Maybe just kept her in the cupboard.
Yes.
That would have been good.
Instead of like killing everyone, if she could have just focused her powers, but she lost control because she never had control.
No.
So, you know, how is she supposed to navigate that whole thing?
Like everybody was against her. Her mom was against her. The only person that was on her side was the coach. And perhaps, but kind of confusingly, the guy that she went to the prom with wasn't really 100% sure what his intentions were. He seemed nice, but I don't know.
There's no way he wasn't aware of their plan in some regard.
Yeah.
I don't think he knew about the pig's blood.
No, I don't think so.
But he did know that he had a girlfriend, and his girlfriend didn't like Carrie.
No.
And she wanted him to ask her to the prom.
But she almost, at some points, she almost feels sorry for Carrie as well. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you could never really decide what side she was on. If she was letting Carrie have the whole prom experience, which seems weird because, you know, you only get to do that once in your life. And why would she sacrifice her chance to do that to give it to Carrie?
Yeah.
So it was kind of misleading. I don't know, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I missed something. I don't know.
So one of the girls tries to stop the whole thing from happening. She looks from under the stairs. Was that his girlfriend?
Yeah, that's his girlfriend. Yeah. She has like the dark curly hair, kind of mousy brown curly hair.
Yeah.
Like it's like she didn't know what was going on, I don't think, because she was looking around, she saw the bucket. And then the teachers saw her looking.
Yeah.
The coach saw her looking and thought, oh, she's setting it up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the coach had got the wrong end of the stick and realized that there was the wrong people that were doing it.
Yeah.
But apparently, which they don't really make clear in the movie, but the guy, the prom date guy, he actually dies from the bucket falling on his head.
Yeah, he gets like concussed.
Yeah. That was kind of how he died. So all that shit was just supposed to be a joke, ended up killing him from their actions, like before Carrie even went apeshit.
Yeah. Her mom is also suppressing herself when it comes to her the mom's sexuality and stuff.
Sure. And is Carrie's dad ever mentioned in this movie?
She does mention him. Like in that sequence of events, she mentions him when Carrie gets out of the shower and she has the knife behind her back. She starts talking about her experience, like how she had sex with Carrie's dad.
Right.
And it was so intense the way that she describes the event.
The event.
Like, I felt like I was being read like a romance novel.
Right.
Like a religious schmutt romance novel. Like, no one needs to explain that to their kids. Like, how you were, had so much passion and how you, like, I'm pretty sure she's like, we moved the beds together.
Oh, wait a minute. I do kind of remember that bit. Maybe it's not a piece I remember particularly well, but the bed, sliding the beds together.
Yeah. She talks about just how, I just remember how awkward it was. It's like, this is obviously the first time that you're telling Carrie about sex.
Right.
And you're doing it in such a weird graphic way.
Yeah. To go, like, from nothing to this.
Yeah. Like, why is this your way?
Yeah.
But she's such an extreme woman. It kind of makes sense. But she feels like, because I guess they weren't married and the dad didn't stay with her. And I don't know what happened to him, but he definitely dipped.
So who's the real sinner now?
Yeah. Well, she's the product of sin.
Oh, true.
That's so
translating it. Yeah.
Yeah. So she kind of blames Carrie for the fact that she made this sin and then she was rejected.
Yeah.
And Carrie's just like a reminder.
Yeah.
Of the fact that she was rejected.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's one way to look at it. I mean, you could see it as God's gift to you, but that'd be silly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's just nature.
Yeah. I mean, that's how everyone else views it, I imagine, but
yeah,
like a crazy Christian woman.
Yeah. Let's go back to the events of that night. So the guy, blonde hair, curly blonde hair, he comes and picks Carrie up.
Yeah.
Carrie is being shamed for the dress that she's wearing, yeah, which is a beautiful gown. And apparently she made it herself.
Mm-hmm.
She sewed it.
Yeah.
Like, so talented.
Yeah.
Like, no one else. I was paying attention to the other dresses that the other girls were wearing. And Carrie definitely had the sexiest dress.
Oh, yeah.
Out of all of them.
100%.
And she was the most revealing.
Yeah.
Even though she was the most religious.
Yeah.
And had the most zealot.
And was so paranoid about her body.
Yeah.
She seemed to give a shit that night.
Yeah.
I mean, good for her.
No, she just really let loose when it came to, she finally had that opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think that was like the coming of age type thing.
It was just the whole magicalness of it when she's walking in there and there's stars and planets hanging from her. And she even says to the coach, I think, this is just so the most beautiful night ever.
Yeah.
But that builds up the emotion for it, because you just see her being so, so happy and just like, oh my God, the first time in my life I'm happy.
Yeah.
And you just know that it's not going to last. It's
no.
Kind of heartbreaking.
And she's very self-aware when she's sitting at the table with her date.
Mm-hmm.
And she asks him again, like, why did you ask me to go with you? She really wants to know.
Yeah.
She's not a fool. Like, she knows something is happening. She knows that this is just a moment for her, a fleeting moment, and she's willing to take advantage of it. But she doesn't believe that this is going to last.
Yeah.
And he tells her that she's beautiful, and he actually kisses her.
Yeah.
And I mean, she is beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think he's kind of, honestly, he kind of falls for her a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, how innocent and how beautiful she is. Like, I think that's quite appealing to him.
Yeah.
When he sees how wild, like, his girlfriend and all his girlfriend's friends are all just so, like, fake and she's something different. And I think that it's taking, it's kind of like that Breakfast Club kind of scenario where it's like the awkward girl turns out to be the hot one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he mentions the fact that she liked his poem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think she was the only one that liked it.
Yeah.
And so he definitely has more depth to him than we get to explore because he's murdered.
Yeah, murdered.
Yeah, by his own friends.
Yes.
Not even by her.
Bucket to the head.
Yeah. You know, they're voting for prom king and queen. And one thing I found in the facts is that the actress that played Carrie, she actually was prom queen.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When she when she was in school, she was prom queen.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, she's up there, the blood spills on her. And that whole sequence of events, like, it seems like only a little bit of blood's on her, but then she's, like, drenched in it.
Well, I think the logistics of it happening, like, it worked. But they didn't get as much blood on her as they wanted. So then they were like, all right, cut the scene, hose her down a bit.
Yeah.
Like, just because it kind of suddenly cuts and she's just, like, drenched in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. I guess it must have we missed a part there where she suddenly is bathing in blood.
Yeah.
Fully bathing in blood. Yeah. But I felt so bad for some of the people that were dying because, you know, when it came to, like, the coach.
Yeah.
She's killed.
Yeah.
What fell on? I can't remember what it was. It was some kind of frame of something that falls on
like
her.
A lighting rig or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of sad, but I mean, this is a horror movie, so people are going to die.
Yeah.
The way the doors all shut.
Yeah.
Everyone's just trapped in, like this burning inferno.
Yeah.
Yeah. But somehow she's like, has telekinesis.
Yeah.
And is fireproof.
Yeah.
Well, because it starts off with the hose. She's just hosing everybody. So it's like the opposite from fire. And then that's what causes the fire is the water on the electric.
Yeah.
And then, starts and then causes the fire.
Yes.
So it's kind of interesting that it starts with water and ends in fire.
Mm-hmm. And there's the one character where she's being hosed down and she can't get up.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually read somewhere that, like, she actually ended up losing some hearing in one of her ears because of that scene.
Oh,
for like 6 months.
What?
Yeah.
Damn. That's commitment.
Yeah. Well, because, I mean, she was really being hosed down.
Yeah.
And that's like brutal. That's like a form of punishment.
Yeah, that'll blast your eardrum out for sure.
I can imagine like a few people got hurt during that scene. That scene took a really long time for them to film. I think like 25 days or something. Oh, crazy. Wow.
Holy crap.
Which most movies, it's like they film in like 10 days.
Yeah.
So we get to the house and she is covered in blood. She's trying to come down from her rage.
Yeah.
She takes a bath.
Yeah.
And when she's taking that bath, I think that's maybe the first time that I notice her being actually sexual.
Yeah. I think that's part of the becoming a woman. Nods to that, maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
It's, I mean, maybe murder really gets her rocks off. I don't know.
It's their own.
Yeah.
I feel like she definitely is empowered by the strength that she has.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
she finally feels in control.
Yeah. It's the first time that she can, you know, if she can control a whole school, then it shouldn't be a problem for her to control this evil woman of her mother.
Yeah, or herself and her own, you know, sexuality as she's, you know, becoming a woman.
Yeah.
You know, so her mom's hiding and being a crazy ass bitch with a knife. And she actually stabs Carrie.
Yeah.
She does. Is it in the back or her stomach? But she falls down the stairs, right? Yeah. She stabs her. She falls down the stairs. And then, you know, it's her mother's fault that she gets murdered because she started it.
Yep.
And I just love the scene where she starts with her telekinesis, like throwing the knives.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, I mean, it's the just recreating the crucifix scene.
Yes. Oh yeah. So good. And it is in the stomach because I remember it being in the stomach now. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. But I think it was to do with this crucifixion because Jesus died with a stab to the stomach with a spear.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it was representative of that. The hands were on the walls and then finally it went into her gut.
It says Margaret's white body forms a taboo similar to the religious icon of Saint Sebastian, seen several times earlier in the film, who was a martyr with arrows, is a note that was in there. But, I mean, it reminded me way more of Jesus than any saint.
Well, lots of saints got crucified. Jesus wasn't the only one to get crucified.
It was this like is true.
What they did back in the day to Christians.
This is very true. We like to just associate Jesus with crucifixion, but he wasn't special.
No, it was commonplace back in those days.
Yeah.
And it would take forever to die on a cross like that. So that's why they would stab you in the gut.
Yeah.
So you'd bleed out quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty brutal.
Yeah. Really brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then she realizes what she's done when she kind of comes out of the whole shock of her mom trying to murder her. And she ends up destroying the entire house.
So the house scene was something that I found out. They were supposed to have boulders falling from the sky.
Oh.
So originally they filmed this whole thing where they made like a mini house.
Uh-huh.
That was like 25% of the size of the real house and showered it with rocks. And they spent 2 days trying to shoot this, but they couldn't get it right.
Oh.
So they canceled that and then they made it so the house just like sunk into the ground.
Yeah.
But in the scene where they're wrestling inside and fighting, as the house is collapsing, there's rocks falling inside the house because they'd already shot that before. So you look at the scene with these random rocks falling through the ceiling. You're like, what the fuck are those doing there?
Oh, I never even thought about that.
It's kind of a weird thing. Yeah, then they just scrapped it and did the it just kind of collapsing in on itself.
Yeah, and it's like she sinks into hell.
Yeah.
And what does the gravestone say? In her dream, the dream sequence. Oh, it says Carrie White burns in hell.
Yes.
It was so good. I need that gravestone for Halloween in front of my house.
That's pretty cool.
I need to make that.
I'm looking at this one.
Yeah.
I think the other one in the movie is different, though.
Is it?
I think that might be from the new remake.
I think they said the same thing, though. Oh, it's like a for sale sign. It's not even a full-on gravestone.
No, but if you look in, it says Carrie White. It does, yeah. So it has the sale sign.
Yeah.
Black written over the top.
Yeah.
It says Carrie White burns in hell.
Yeah, with like an arrow.
Arrow, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. Just on a pile of rubble where the house used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that ending scene where she sticks her hand out and grabs the girl.
Yeah.
That made me jump.
It did, yeah. That's the only jump scare in the whole movie, I think, right?
It is.
Yeah.
But it definitely catches you off guard. Are there any themes that I forgot to mention?
Well, something I wanted to mention was there was a lot of, like, nods to the movie Psycho.
Yeah.
Like, early on in the movie, when you start seeing her powers, like, she makes the kid fall off his bike.
Yeah.
And there's like the dagger sawashin, like, wah, 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 kind of thing. So every time she did like a little bit of telekinesis, you get the Psycho sound.
Yes.
And then the name of the school was Bates High School.
Yeah.
Which was a nod to Bates Motel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There was quite a few sort of scenes that just kind of gave me that Psycho. And the shower scene as well, like the bath and the blood and the dagger.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. There was a lot of like nods to that, I feel like.
No, there definitely was. I have that in like my trivia about the movie. There are a lot of references to Psycho. Even the slaughterhouse was like the Bates slaughterhouse or something.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing I really liked, there was actually, I'm super into photography. Like as a, like an amateur photographer, I really kind of enjoy looking at the way things were shot.
Yeah.
They actually did something really cool in this movie where they do like a split focus shot, which involves having a regular camera lens with a crack down the middle, and it would focus on two people at the same time, but blur out the middle, which is like a really hard shot to do, like on video.
Mm-hmm.
So it was in the classroom, the one scene I'm referring to, where you can see the curly haired blue boy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Carrie in the background.
Yeah.
Everyone else in the shot is like completely blurred out. It's a super cool shot. I love it. I think they call it like a split focal point.
Nice. Yeah. I'm glad that you mentioned that. I actually read something about that, but I was confused onto what it was referencing. So like you're just explaining it to me and now I understand.
I didn't really understand it either. It was a new thing for me really, but I guess nowadays you can do it all in like post-production with just any camera.
So I think we've covered everything in the movie.
I think so.
So now I have a little game for you.
Okay.
I kind of showed you the reality show that I base my game off of.
Yeah.
The reality show is a British show called Snog, Marry, Avoid. But my game is the Scream Queen version. It's called Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Okay. Let's go.
So, all right. So I'm going to start with Carrie. So for Carrie, would you snog, marry, or sorry, I'm reading the wrong thing. Fuck, marry, kill. And well, why?
Okay. So I think that Carrie's absolutely adorable. I would probably like to marry her, but at the same time, I'd be kind of scared of her powers. Like, if I
just don't piss her off.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm probably gonna, aren't I? I mean, I'm a man and that's just what we do. So I'd probably marry her. Yeah. I think she's cute enough to marry for sure.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you're not afraid of a powerful woman.
I like a powerful woman. Nothing wrong with that.
So Norma, which is PJ Souls.
Yeah.
She's in the movie. Would you fuck, marry, or kill?
So is she, she's not Travolta's boyfriend, girlfriend, boyfriend?
No.
The curly haired one?
She, no, it's not the curly haired one. Well, actually, so this is her picture. She wears like the red hat.
Oh, yeah, her. Yeah, she's pretty funny. I don't know. I feel like when I was at school, I'd probably be more attracted to her than the good looking ones just because she's a little bit different, a little bit quirky.
Yeah.
I wouldn't kill her.
No?
No.
Well, okay, I'm going to tell you your other choice because you have to do one to each of them.
Yeah, give me all three.
Okay, I have to give you all three. Yeah. And then the third one is Miss Collins, which is the coach.
Yeah.
Because she's a badass. Yeah, okay, she is, out of those three.
Okay, so, all right, so it's pretty easy. I'm going to marry Carrie.
Okay.
I'm going to fuck the coach.
Okay.
And kill PJ.
Good. That was my choice too.
I think that's the only way to go, right?
Yeah. Okay. I think if you went any other way, I wouldn't trust you.
Yeah. I think you have to really. I mean, I quite like the PJ character because she was so wild, but
yeah.
She didn't really get too involved in it, did she? Was she
huge? I mean, she's the one who was getting hosed down.
Yeah.
She was definitely like one of the ones that was involved with the pig's blood and stuff. She was she was a horrible bitch.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think she just didn't have a boyfriend out of them.
That might have been it. She's just jealous. Well, she was a bit wild. I don't know. Yeah, no. Get rid of her.
She's also in, I picked her out of everyone because she was in the first Halloween.
Oh, was she?
She was the friend. She's the one who the boyfriend is murdered in the kitchen and then Michael Myers comes with the ghost sheet.
Yeah.
She's the one.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
she's
much hotter in Halloween than she is in this film.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's also older, a little bit more mature in Halloween.
Her character in this movie was definitely offbeat.
Yeah.
She definitely, I don't know why she was hanging around with the popular girls, because she looked more like a nerd.
Yeah, she was definitely more tomboyish, I think, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right.
They're all gonna laugh at you!
Sorry, Cassie.
Trust me, Carrie. You can trust me. Trust me, Carrie. You can trust me. Trust me, Carrie. You can trust me.
Now it's time for the true horrors of it all. Stephen King got the idea for Carrie while working in a laundry. Some of the characters, like Carrie's religious, fanatical mother, were based on people who worked there with him. Carrie was inspired by two girls Stephen King observed in grade school and high school. In his introduction to a new edition of Carrie, King called them Tina White and Sandra Irving, so as to not tarnish their names, since not everyone agrees with Carrie's actions. Tina was a very peculiar girl who came from a very peculiar family. Her mother wasn't a religious nut like the mother in Carrie. She was a game nut, a sweepstakes nut, who subscribed to magazines for people who entered contests. The girl had one change of clothes for the entire school year, and all the other kids made fun of her.
In school, Tina was quiet, sat in the back row, and was always bullied because she only had one set of clothes. And when she finally got a new outfit and was very proud of it, the bullying did not cease. The other girl, Sandra, lived down the street from the house that King grew up in and was raised by a single mother. When a 16-year-old King assisted her mother in moving some furniture, he was struck by the massive cross that hung above the couch. Sandra was also avoided by her peers because of her seizures and strange dress. Sadly, neither of these girls made it to the age of 30. Tina took her own life, and Sandra died from a seizure alone in her apartment. Some of Carrie derived from Stephen King's own experiences as a teacher. Some of it may have also been autobiographical, as King admits that as a young person growing up, the other kids teased him to death. We've all heard that before, been teased to death. There's a reason why we put death at the end of teasing, because it's really, really emotionally damaging and can lead to some pretty horrible things happening. While Carrie is a fictional horror story, some true crime cases share thematic similarities and the potential for explosive reactions to abuse. Carrie is a murderer in the end, but we are still able to empathize with her because almost everyone has experienced some sort of degradation by another person. Most bullies are just modeling behavior they've seen at home. Most, not all. In America, we see this kind of mass killings in schools, except instead of a fire, it's a firearm. This happens far too much in America, and as a mother, it's always one of my biggest fears. As a former teacher, it was also one of my biggest fears being in the school system. The U.S. Secret Service National Threat Assessment Center found that a majority of school attackers had experienced persistent bullying. Now look, I know not everyone who is bullied will end up being a massive murderer, but there is a link between the two things. Toxic masculinity is right there with being bullied. Like 99.9% of school shooters are men. Us ladies just pull each other's hair and or fuck each other's boyfriends as revenge. I'm not going to get too deep into any specific examples, but I do have a list of school shootings that have happened in 2025 alone, because this shit happens in America all the time. As of March 31st, 2025, there have been at least 10 school shooting incidents in the United States. These incidents have resulted in multiple injuries and fatalities. I will give you some information on two of these incidents. So, January 22nd, 2025, at Antioch High School in Nashville, Tennessee, a 17-year-old student opened fire in the cafeteria, killing a 16-year-old female student and injuring another student before turning the gun on himself. March 4th, 2025, a 16-year-old student was shot and killed on the grounds of Lansdowne High School in Baltimore, Maryland. So that's just two of the 10. Definitely, if you're listening to my podcast, you should probably know that I am for gun control and more rules and regulations on the licensure process. No one's trying to take your guns away, but your guns should be, they should be way more regulated than what they are. I could get into a lot of specific things when it comes to that, but I'm just not even, I'll leave it at that. I don't have to keep going on. I think it's a reasonable thing. I don't think that this is a crazy thing to say. And if you think it's a crazy thing to say, you're fucking crazy. So, eh. Let's end on a high note. I'm trying something new here. I think I'm going to do like a weekly horror update with like things that are happening in the horror genre. in general. So that could be like movies that are out, things that are happening, maybe events that are happening around. Mainly going to probably focus on movies that are coming out in the theaters and what's going on there. Because that's like the most relevant, or, you know, TV shows, what's happening in the horror genre on TV. So The Woman in the Yard is in theaters right now. This film is rated PG-13. It's a psychological thriller that explores grief and depression. From everything I've heard, you should probably grab some tissues when you go see this movie, because it's apparently very emotional and a tearjerker. Jenna Ortega and Paul Rudd lead the cast of A24's horror comedy, Death of a Unicorn. This film is rated R, and people are saying this satirical film falls into the Eat the Rich trope. The Final Destination Bloodlines trailer was released a few days ago. This movie is coming out May 16th in theaters. The trailer gives up the ghost in a lot of ways, but I'm sure there's more to the plot that we haven't seen. Just have to wait it out and go see the movie, and hopefully they didn't, you know, show us the entire plot line. The Last of Us Season 2 premieres on Max on April 13th. I'm super excited about that one. So there's going to be a 5-year jump between seasons, and it's opening during winter. The fifth and allegedly final installment of the franchise Hell House, LLC Lineage, is going big with a theatrical release announcement by Iconic Events. Terror Films Releasing has teamed up with Iconic Events to bring Hell House LLC to theaters this summer before premiering exclusively on Shudder in late October. The film is set to hit theaters sometime in August. In my local horror news, this weekend at the Tampa Fairgrounds in Florida, there is Spookala, which is a horror convention. I'm stoked to see Rose McGowan, Holly Combs, and David Dasmalchian. I saw a picture of the set they made for photos with the David Dasmalchian. And it looks like this stage from the movie Late Night with the Devil, which I loved that movie. And I have to get a picture with him on that set. Like, it looks so good. I want to feel like I'm in that movie with him. It would be so nice. Shoutouts for this week come from social media. Recently, I posted a video of a scream scale I will be using in future episodes. It's a scale where iconic scream queens are used as a gauge for how good a horror movie is. The louder, the better. It goes from 1 to 5, with 5 being the highest score and 1 being the lowest score. At number 5, I have Mia Goth, then Samara Weaving, Jamie Lee Curtis, Shelley Duvall, and last but not least, Sarah Michelle Gellar. On Blue Sky, Shockluster Video commented, "Love the level breakdown, hail to the queens." And I could not emphasize that comment enough. So yes, hail to the queens. I also recently recorded an episode with Trash Cat Productions. I'm a guest on their episode about the horror show Midnight Mass. Such a good short series. If you haven't seen it, it's on Netflix and it's fucking fantastic. Made me cry the first time I watched it. I'm looking forward to that episode coming out. If you have movie suggestions that could fit into my category of the month, you can email me at screamqueenpodcaster@gmail.com and I will share your suggestions. My horror trivia event will be based on the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, all 7 movies. I'm ignoring the last 2. We're going to pretend like they don't even exist. My next event will take place on April 15th at Conduit. This is a weekly podcast with new episodes out every Thursday. All the research, writing, and audio is done by yours truly. This is a one-woman show, and I'm doing my very best. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen. It means a lot, and I mean a lot. So please do it now. Do it. You can find me on Instagram at Scream Queen Podcaster, Blue Sky at Scream Queen Podcast, TikTok at Scream Queen Podcast, and there is a link tree that will take you to all the other places like YouTube and Facebook. Be the Miss Collins in the world. Until next time, goodbye.